Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Learn to Love podcast, your guide to everything love, sex, intimacy, and relationships. Each week, your host, Zach Beach, interviews new experts on love, including couples therapists, relationship coaches, sex educators, and best-selling authors. Learn the best tips and cutting-edge wisdom to better love yourself, others, and the world. Thanks so much for joining us. We hope you enjoy the show.
Hello, beautiful souls. I'm so positively delighted that you could join us on the Learn to Love podcast. I am your host, Zach Beach, and this week we have not one, but two incredible guests on the show. Our first guest is Janine Estes Powell, who is the founder of Estes Therapy, a group practice working with all aspects of relationships. Janine is a licensed marriage and family therapist, certified in emotionally focused therapy, and specializes in training therapists to work with couples. Our second guest is Jacqueline, aka Jackie Wheelick, who is also a licensed marriage and family therapist and the owner of her own private practice, Therapy by Jackie. She specializes in working with couples, relationships, emotions, trauma, and attachment, and has advanced training in EFT and other research-based theories. They both came onto the show to talk about their book, Help for High Conflict Couples, Using Emotionally Focused Therapy and the Science of Attachment to Build Lasting Connection. It was such a joy to have them on. It was our first time really going deep into this world of emotionally focused therapy and seeing how it can benefit couples of all types. So without further ado, let's begin. Hello, Janine. Hello, Jackie. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having us.
Let's go one at a time. Jackie Wheelick, how are you today?
I'm doing really good. I'm happy to be here and I'm excited to talk about our book and about EFT and yeah.
Me too. And Janine Estes Powell, how are you today?
I am great. I'm looking forward to having this podcast and just having a good day today. So thanks for having us.
Good. Well, thank you both for coming onto the show. I have so many questions and I'm so lucky to have both of you on. So, you know, there's three of us here and I really just got to ask, you know, why can't we all just get along? Why can't couples just love each other and be happy all the time? And, you know, you made that promise, right? To get married, to love each other to death to your part. You want each other to be happy. You know, why are relationships so hard?
I love that. You know, it's so true. As we get together and we hope we're like, hey, we have all this love and we're going to be great. And all we need is love. But you need more than just love. Right? We need to know how to work through the hard stuff in order to keep the relationship strong. And that's the tough part. I wish we didn't have to fight.
Mm-hmm. So love isn't enough?
No, I wish it was, man. I wish it was. Yeah.
What do I need more than love for a happy, loving partnership?
You know, I think we need that secure base, right? We need a solid feeling of knowing that our relationship is secure. We need to be able to know I can count on my partner no matter what. When the going gets tough, we can stay connected and we can have hard talks and we can show up for each other. And yes, we need love and we need the ability to take risks with each other, show up for each other, and stay connected through the hard stuff.
I love it. Take risks, show up, stay connected through the hard stuff.
Yeah.
Jackie, you have anything to add? Top tips?
It's all about safety. Like we have a saying, we like to say in therapy, like safe is sexy, right? Because if we don't feel safe with our partners, we're not going to be able to show up in these vulnerable ways that are shown, research is showing can create healthy, happy connections, right? But if it's not safe to be vulnerable with our partners or to fully, like, we call it unzip, right? Like unzip ourselves and let them see like our softest parts, that's going to be really hard to do with emotional connection and sex too. Like we talk about sex a lot in the book as well. Yeah. So safety, that's what we need. That's what, I mean, that's like the goal of EFT, right? Is to create a secure attachment.
I love that. Safety is sexy. Because when I was asking, like, what do we need more than love? You know, a lot of people might think, oh, yeah, you got to have love and the physical chemistry, or you got to have a healthy, robust sex life. But what I'm hearing from you is actually you're not going to have a good sex life unless there's the safety and security in your relationship.
Yes, that comes, that absolutely comes first.
All right. I want my relationship to be more safe and secure. What can I do? Hypothetically.
Well, here enters EFT.
So for those unfamiliar.
Yeah, let's start with that. What is EFT? I'll let Janine dive in with this.
So EFT is called emotionally focused therapy, and it's a research-based approach for couples, like for therapists using with couples, and it shows long-term change. It's very a short-term therapy approach. But what we're doing is looking at how do you create that solid foundation so you can have the hard talks. So in moments, like how do we have a good relationship? What you asked about is like, how do I have this secure relationship? Well, the moments that are the most critical is like in the distressed moments. If you're not feeling good, how are you reaching for your partner and saying, hey, I'm not okay? And then how do you respond? So a lot of times we got that offense, defense type of reactions, right? Some person might blame, the other person gets defensive, and they just go round and round and they get caught up in this negative pattern. And what we want to do is really find effective and efficient ways to bring up concerns that draws your partner close and showing up for each other in critical moments. So we don't have to disconnect. So we need to find, it's like all about how we communicate in a way that's not so guarded and defensive. We want to do it in more vulnerable ways. And at times people spin out and get really out of control and get very reactive and go from 0 to 60. And when they go 0 to 60, right, that intensity, it's really fast, really quick, and we lose each other and fights happen and we disconnect. Somebody starts sleeping on the couch, right? There's just like, they might leave, they might threaten things. They get into these all different types of fights. So we want to be able to catch those, how people are talking about it, and talk about it in ways that really draw each other close.
And one of the coolest parts that EFT helps with getting along and creating secure attachment is like, identifying what that negative cycle of communication is, really pinpointing it. And so couples know exactly what it is, and then helping them be able to dismantle it, stop it, and then create a new positive cycle of interaction. And so by the end of this short-term treatment, which we love, you know, we don't expect people to wait years and years and years to feel better. The couple should kind of have this snowball effect of this positive cycle, making things feel safer and better and more connected in their communication. And then that just trickles into everything else. Then sex feels easier. Then the dishes feel easier because we're not fighting over like the content. We know how to like have these hard conversations about anything.
I love those three steps. Identify negative cycles of communication, help to dismantle and stop it, and create a new positive cycle. Are those essentially the stages of EFT?
Good question. Yeah, so the first stage is kind of de-escalating. So the first stage is de-escalating and understanding what the pattern looks like. So when couples come in, we're going to help them learn what their pattern is, understand what their underlying emotions are, what their needs are, making sense of it. And that's where it de-escalates. The second phase is then getting a corrective emotional experience. Right. And so what they're doing is they're learning how to identify those emotions and reactions, turn to each other in a more vulnerable way, and get a corrective experience. And they need that over and over and over to create change. And then the third phase of EFT is really kind of dotting the I's, crossing the T's, making sure everything's kind of organized, buttoned up, right? And creating new narratives for the relationship. That's in a very simplistic way to describe the three stages. As a clinician, we know where we're at and there's a roadmap. This is a great thing is there's always a roadmap for the clinicians on where to go with the clients, what steps we need to do. If we don't hit those markers, it tells us we're going too fast. And so it's a great model to use. And that's where our book comes in, is helping our clients and the readers learn how to identify what their patterns are, understand what their feelings are, understand those deeper emotions, then learning how to get that corrective experience.
I think that's my favorite part about EFT just in general, but also our book is like a really cool thing about EFT is that corrective experience Jane's talking about. And that uses the, you know, a lot of neuroscience that like we can build new neural pathways when we practice new things in new ways, right? So in EFT, you're practicing with your partner in the session with the therapist support, these new ways of interacting with them, new conversations about really hard and vulnerable things. And when you do it over and over and over again, your brain is like, oh yeah, this is safe. And it starts to kind of plow this like new path that gets easier and easier to fall into over time. And in our book, we were like, how can we bring that experience into reading? You know, because people have this at home, they're not going to be in a therapy session. And what we did is we have a ton of exercises throughout the book for the reader to practice every single concept at home with their partner, or if partner's not open to doing it, we have options for what somebody could do on their own also. And it's really cool in the hopes of bringing that corrective experience that EFT is really known for into a written format. So it's really fun. That was one of my favorite parts of writing it.
Yeah, I like that. We have de-escalate, correct, and create. Essentially.
Beautifully said. I like that. I want to use that.
I'm just repeating. I'm being the therapist, you know, repeating back what I'm hearing.
Okay. You're a good therapist.
Somebody said it. I do in the podcast the other day. She's like, oh yeah, that's what we do. Let's talk about the E in EFT, right? Emotionally focused therapy. Because an interesting thing I'm almost hearing from you, and I want to see if you agree with this statement, is that there are certain emotions that create conflict, and those are the ones we want to de-escalate. So maybe anger, resentment, fear, I guess, would be the opposite of security. And then there's other emotions we almost want to cultivate. So how do emotions play a role in disconnection and connection?
Gosh, they play a role everywhere, right? Yeah. I love that you're bringing that up, the E. And emotionally focused therapy. It's all about that, the emotions that we're feeling. With the emotions, when we have them arise, right, we might have these really joyful moments and feeling connected with our partner, and we'll feel confident and feel really secure. But there might be moments of something's off, something's going on, right? These alarm bells start to scream. Inside emotionally, there's these deeper, raw, primary feelings that we have. They're this initial raw feeling that happens, but a lot of times couples get stuck going into that secondary reaction of anger and frustration, agitation, overwhelm, and they snap at each other. They question each other. And what we have to do is help build that window of tolerance to understand when that disconnection happens. Yes, there's frustration and anger, but what's that deeper, raw feeling of emotion? What's underneath it and what's driving it? And the more we can talk about that kind of driving emotion, kind of more raw feeling, that typically will draw out to what they're needing, asking for what they need in more of a clear way, and having the partner stay more connected when they're in this vulnerable state versus reactive, blaming, defending, withdrawing, right? So we want to be able to reach out, like you use the word fear. And if somebody is afraid they don't matter, it's important that they can say, I'm really scared I don't matter to you. I'm really worried about that. Can you reassure me? And they can reach and ask for it. But at times it doesn't come out that way. This happens all over with couples, whether you're high conflict, low conflict, whatever type of conflict, there might be an insecurity that happens. Yet we don't know how to put it towards or even identify that emotion that's going on. And it just, all of a sudden I'm annoyed with my partner, right? You know, like it's very common at my house. I can get really annoyed with my wife really quickly. And it's like, okay, yes, she annoyed me, but what else am I feeling? What else is going on? And it's usually this deeper sense of I'm not feeling seen or heard about. And that feels really scary. I need to know that how I feel matters, right? And the more that we expand that awareness and understand what we're really feeling, the less snappy I'm going to be at my partner, right? The more I can say, I'm just really scared I don't matter. Can you reassure me right now?
I love that example so much because we've all been there. And like when we come to our partners with a vulnerability, like the natural instinct when we see someone in a vulnerability is to lean in, like we use this example in the book, like if you just see someone crying, you're just going to want to lean in. Oh my gosh, are you okay? What's going on? And if you see someone yelling at you, the natural instinct is to protect and back away. So it's like, how can we use that kind of, it's more complicated than that, but like this basic example, how can we use that to our benefit and our relationships by setting our partners up for success so that they can lean in and set us up for success too, then we get their support.
I like that. Yelling, we lean away. Vulnerability, we lean in.
It's hard to go cuddle on a cactus, right?
I love that so much.
I'm going to use that. That is good.
Well, it's interesting because clients will say, like, well, I was telling my partner what I needed. And it was like, no, you were attacking them. So it's really hard for them to come and cuddle into that cactus, right? They want you to come cuddle in, but you're pokey right now.
It's the best.
It's like lean into the punch. How am I supposed to lean into the punch? I'm not going to. I'm gonna step away.
Like the goal of EFT is like, okay, how to move away from being the cactus into something a little bit softer that our partners can
flower, and, you know. Yeah. The goal is to move from a cactus to an inviting flower.
An inviting flower. Maybe not a rose. Bee,
you know, that's yeah. Really we lean into this metaphor.
100%.
So real quick, what are some examples of those deeper primary feelings? Because I heard from you that our secondary reactions tend to be the anger, the agitation, the overwhelm, and especially annoyance too. Just like, oh, you make me so. And what are some of those more deeper, vulnerable emotions that we should think about getting in touch with?
Yeah. Sadness is a huge one that shows up with a lot of couples underneath a lot of those secondary emotions. And a lot of people don't even know that they're sad until we kind of dig in and really like tune into it. Another one is like fear, these attachment fears that our clients might have. Fear that kind of Janine's example was perfect, right? Fear that maybe our partners don't see us or we're not being seen or heard or valued or any of that. Those are just attachment fears are really, really important. Sadness and fear are two really big ones there.
I like those because no one says, I'm sad at you, right?
I'm sad at you. I've never heard that. And I love it.
Exactly. You know, it's never going to be an attack. It's always going to be a, oh, wow, yeah, this is what I'm feeling.
Yeah. And of course, like joy and excitement are beautiful primary emotions. But, you know, a lot of times our couples, sometimes they struggle with that. But really, we're not. So those don't cause as much disconnection as these other ones.
So your book is titled Help for High Conflict Couples. And how do you define a high conflict couple?
We are defining a high conflict couple as they're really just the same as not high conflict couples, except for you're going to see the volume turned up on their reactions and their behaviors. The metaphorical volume of everything is just a little bit more intense, a little bit higher escalated. So you're going to see them kind of go from that 0 to 60 reaction we talked about earlier really, really fast. You might see throwing phones, throwing things, getting in the car and leaving, sleeping on the couch, threatening to end the relationship. Maybe yet, you know, so some of these pursue behaviors or withdraw behaviors, we would call them, they're just amplified a little bit.
And even like the ice cold shutdowns.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's like this quick to shut down and it could be within a second, right? A partner comes in, sees the dishes not done. What's going on with the dishes? Boom, they're now in this escalated fight. They're frustrated. Ice cold shutdown is part of high escalation, high conflict.
Yeah.
Which is mm-hmm. ironic because a lot of people are like, hey, I didn't do a thing. I was quiet. And actually that ignites things as well. So we might see it as Jackie said, that high volatility and reactions and throwing things, defending, blaming. But it is within 0 to 60. It is fast. It is quick and it is intense. And it's really, and also with high conflict, what happens is how I feel is more important than how you feel, right? It's hard to track how I feel and how my behaviors are, how they're impacting you. Or I might know that I'm going to hurt you, but I'm going to do it anyways, right? There's a like, I don't care. how it's impacting you, because my pain kind of is more important or bigger than your pain. And so they get really stuck in their own stuff and can't really see the impact, how they're impacting each other.
And I think it's so, I love that you're bringing up the ice cold shutdown, because it is so common. Like when we get couples coming in, that the person who is shutting down or leaving feels like it's so easy to point the finger to the partner and blame them because their partner's the one, quote, you know, air quotes, acting crazy. Not seeing that is equally as escalating to just totally shut someone out, right? And in EFT with the negative cycle, each person's reactions, it's like a ping pong match. Each person's behavior and reactions, they're serving a ping pong ball over to the other side of the net for their partner. So the more somebody ice cold shuts down, the more their partner is going to react to that shutdown and be like, let me make you hear me even more, and amplifies that behavior, and they'll serve the ball back. And then, you know, you can start to imagine how these play a role back and forth, influencing each other. Our partners have a huge influence on how we react and show up in our disagreements.
Well, that's what I was wondering is, I think we know it takes two to tango, so to speak. But when we do look at high conflict couples, like, do you find that sometimes there is just, say, one partner who might be, say, quicker to anger, might have more buttons and triggers than the other one that's kind of doing the escalation? Or do you find that most of the time both partners are really good at pushing each other's buttons?
Well, they're pushing each other's buttons in different ways. So the ice cold shutdown, the quiet, can actually be pushing that button of the partner. And it's a common pattern to have somebody withdraw and shut down where the other one is in a pursuit who comes out blaming, critical, threatening. So that is a common pattern, but high conflict might also look like a quick withdrawal, and they touch something and they disconnect immediately. And there is no reconnecting, but we're not talking about it, but there's just this complete distance. And it's so fragile that we don't know how to come back together. It could take weeks to come back together. And so the high conflict, in theory, at times people think, oh, it's the yelling and screaming and throwing things, which is high conflict. And actually, it can look like a variety of things. So
we had this like this sentence or the statement that we wrote about that kind of like really impacts me, which is, a lot of times partners don't know how much they impact their partner. So a lot of times let's just use the example of that shutdown, right? A lot of times those people have no clue the impact that that's having on their partner. You know, their partner's like in so much pain, and the vulnerable, you know, attachment need is, you know, feeling unseen and unheard, and, you know, fear that they don't matter to their partner. And the person in the shutdown is like, what? You want to matter to me? You were just screaming at me about the dishes. Like, I had no idea, like, you cared that you even wanted me online, right? And so I think that's a important place of seeing, like, each person's role can be pretty equal in these dynamics once they start to understand, oh, this is a serious impact on the other person. I had no idea. But they won't know that until we all start talking vulnerably about our attachment needs and those emotions and what we're feeling, you know?
I think that's a really important insight, that conflict doesn't always look like yelling. And somebody might be like, we're not a conflict couple. We just don't talk for weeks. Like,
I've heard that.
Yeah. But that separation is another form of conflict. So, all right, I'm a high conflict couple. I go to couples counseling, but you write that there are three A's, in other words, things that begin with the letter A, that prevent couples counseling from being effective. So what are those three A's?
That is abuse, addiction, and affairs. So what we mean by that is things that are actively occurring. We need these things to pause before we can move forward. So I like to be clear about this because I don't want to discourage people from getting help, because it's really common that high conflict couples have these maybe in history or something like that. We would need these to pause before starting treatment only because the point of EFT is to create a secure attachment, and these things are going to prevent us from having a secure attachment. That's
right. There's these competing attachments, such as the substance or the affair. And then, of course, the abuse, physical, sexual, financial, emotionally, that is unsafe. We definitely encourage people to seek out the counseling to get help, to get the resources they need. However, if we want to do a deeper dive in the relationship, it's hard for a partner to get really sensitive and vulnerable if they know that Friday night you're going out with your partner, with the other person, right? The other woman per se. So yeah. They're not going to be able to regulate. Or if there's disappearing acts and there's the competing attachment of the substance, I'm going to get frustrated. I'm going to get upset with you. I'm going to look crazy because I know you go offline. I don't know what it's about, but your substance hijacks you, right? I can't access you all the time. Substance is hijacked. So we want all of those three to stop first. But those will automatically cause high conflict too. So we have to be aware that if you're in a high conflict, any three of these things, well, it's normal to have a high conflict with any of these three things going on.
Which is reasonable. So like, for example, if we had a couple come in and there's an active affair going on, we would have them like pause the affair, and then they would come in and we would do EFT to like repair the affair, the attachment injury. So it's not like you can never do EFT. It's just like...
And then they... can continue.
press play. We're not pausing it.
That was the wrong word.
Pause. We're not pausing. We need to get it to stop and go away.
Delete. Delete the affair.
Delete.
Before going on and working on the relationship. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's a whole podcast all on its own, by the way.
I know.
Oh my God. And unfortunately, my next question might be a podcast all on its own, because you do have a chapter on trauma. And I'm just thinking about it now because I did recently watch this video with Gabor Mate, who just talks about how early childhood trauma experiences are strongly correlated with later substance abuse, as a person kind of just seeks to regulate themselves with outside substances because they haven't developed that within themselves. So my question is kind of a dual question in terms of, like, let's say there is trauma in a relationship and like we kind of all have some in our life, but what is each partner's role? So like, what is partner A role who maybe has a traumatic experience that easily gets triggered in the relationship? And what is partner B's role in supporting their partner through healing and working through it?
I love those questions because you are identifying kind of how it takes two to tango. And the person who has trauma, they really need to be able to process through and understand how their body reacts and why their body gets so triggered. So at times, right, like you walk in, you see the dishes and
always the dishes.
It's always the dishes. It's always the dishes. We hear about the dishes all the time.
It's
not
true.
About the dishes, but it's about the dishes. So they might walk in and see the dishes not done or done or whatever it is. It's unpredictable. Their body floods in, right? And they get this agitation. They have to know, oh, this was unpredictable. I didn't predict this. My body got so reactive. They have to be aware of what's happening. So that's to expand that emotional window and starting to understand that dysregulation and calm their bodies down. That's partner A who has the trauma. Partner B, then... they will feel it and it's intense for them because they're seeing their partner and they have to regulate their body as well. Calm it down and stay present. Like, hey, something about this upset you, right? Because their partner is going to come at them a bit or have these intense reactions. Partner B has to really find a way, like, did something about this trigger you? What's happening? I'm here. How you feel matters. Hold on. Can you slow down, right? Or I need you to stop yelling at me. I want to hear what you have to say, but I need you to stop yelling or attacking me. So they have to really stay online for their partner. Unfortunately, some couples might have a trauma relationship where they both walk in with trauma. And so they flare each other very quickly and it's fast and it's intense. And so we have a part in the book, actually in the beginning, is about how to kind of regulate the nervous system and calm it down. And the trauma chapter is really about helping them identify where their trauma gets triggered, how come it gets triggered, and what they can do on both sides, because it is fast and it is quick. And it's not about loving it, not loving each other. It's more about something triggered my body. And my body remembers, even though my brain is here with you about the dishes and I'm just mad at you, but really their body's having a fight, flight, freeze, or appease reaction.
And that's the body's job, is to respond really quickly to triggers that remind us of our trauma, right? So it's like very adaptive, and we can predict that that's going to happen in that 0 to 60 response. And it doesn't help the high conflict at all. And it can leave their partners being confused. Like, yeah, why are we spinning out and yelling now because of the dishes? Why is this such a big deal? So like having conversations around our trauma can feel really, really healing for couples to start to understand. Oh, it like contextualizes their arguments, right? Oh, it's not about the dishes. This reminds you of not feeling heard or important or something, you know, whatever that trigger is. And we have really cool exercises in the trauma chapter in the book to help people find out maybe what are some of those triggers and what is trauma. We have a very nuanced approach to trauma in our book, which I'm really appreciating, because it's very common. We get couples in EFT come in and they're like, I have no trauma. I just get 0 to 60 when the dishes are in the sink, you know, or whatever. We start to explore that. And, you know, we say in the book, trauma is not just for war veterans or, you know, victims of car accidents or something, which obviously those things are very traumatic as well. But there's a lot of nuanced things that can be traumatic that do impact how we show up in our relationships. Everything as nuanced as bullying or being in childhood, having a parent who had a mental illness, or relationships with siblings, right? Or so we start to kind of give examples of what this can look like to help people make sense of their reality, you know?
And with trauma, we need to have corrective experiences to help our body know that even though I just got triggered and my body says it's unsafe, it's actually safe. This is my partner. They love me. They see me. It's okay for me to share these feelings, right? We need to have these corrective experiences versus going into attack, blame, withdrawal, shutdown, right? So that's where it's both partners have to take those efforts. Partner who has the trauma has to really find a pause button and understand, like, I just went super intense, fight, flight, freeze, appease. Like, why did I do that? What's happening? Hey, body, it's safe. I'm just got frustrated. Like, this was a frustrating situation. Hey, body, slow down, right? Pausing, calming that body down. And then the other partner really staying online and available and not getting caught in defend, blame, attack, withdraw.
I love that. The fundamental need to feel heard and seen keeps coming up for me hearing both of you. I like how Janine, you said partner B in this scenario can say how you feel matters, which I feel like is really powerful. And then Jackie, you were saying, yeah, we might have a fear of not feeling heard, not feeling important, or not feeling like we matter. So in your book, you have this lovely table. It's called the Conflict Toolbox that you have on cooling down. It's almost like a pop quiz, but you can obviously look at the book if you want to, because I kind of want to rapid fire go through some of them, because they're really solid. So one of them is, what if I'm angry at my partner?
So, okay, if you're angry at your partner, then that's a good chance to press pause and then see what's that primary emotion underneath that anger. Because, right, we don't want to share the anger. It's going to push our partner's away, not be effective, not get our needs met, right? Not going to help. So then dig underneath, find that primary emotion, and then share it in a vulnerable way. If it's safe to share. About you, exactly.
About you and how you feel, not about how your partner did or...
Yeah. I always say, if you add the word like after the statement I feel, you're not sharing a feeling.
I feel like you are.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like you're being rude or, you know, back up. But I feel like it's not a feeling. It's I feel sad. I feel lonely. Right. Whatever.
I like to think about it as taking a spotlight and putting the spotlight on to you versus putting the spotlight onto your partner. And because when the spotlight is on the partner, it's like, you did this and you did that and you, right? A lot of pointing at them and really putting that spotlight onto you and knowing like, no, I'm feeling really scared that I don't matter right now. Or I'm really afraid that you see me as inadequate. Can you reassure me? So again, as Jackie said, if you're finding yourself frustrated, that pause button is going to be critical. So you press pause, do a deep dive. And earlier on in the book, we go through that negative cycle. So the readers will be aware of like, what is their negative cycle? What is that common emotion that they'll be able to find and then share it in that vulnerable way?
Because in the negative cycle, that it's really predictable. So people can go, oh, yep, here's that anger again.
Well, that's a lovely segue into the next question in the toolbox, which is, what if I want to share a feeling with my partner? So I've gotten in touch with that feeling. Now what do I do?
So if a partner is about to share, we like to give a kind of a, I'm about to share something vulnerable because you matter to me. And we let them know, like, I'm going to take this jump. I'm going to take this risk because you matter to me. So it's letting the other person know I'm going to do it. Or it, you know, does now work? Is this time work for you? Can I share it now? Right? Because the partner, we don't want them to be walking out the door and you're about to share it with them and they're not available or they're a little preoccupied. So it's, I'm about to take this risk because you matter. Is now a good time? I want to share this feeling with you. I've been doing some thinking and I want to try to do it in a new way. So we're letting them know I'm about to go to this vulnerable step.
I love that. That's such a good phrase. I'm about to share something vulnerable because you matter to me. All right, let's just do one more tool because our time is winding down. What if I'm feeling numb?
So we talk in our book about the difference between being in hyperarousal and hypoarousal. And we could do a whole podcast on that in itself. But basically, when we're numb, our body is going into a state of hypoarousal and like short piece about like, what does that mean? It just means that overwhelmed, it's too much and our body is kind of going offline and shutting down. So that's all that is to me is just like a sticky note that our body is giving us like, oh, hey, it's time to come back online. It's time to regulate. And so we have a whole list of tools for different situations. One is numb or hypoarousal that you can insert into that situation to do to regulate that overwhelm, that shutdown, to come back online. But it's going to be not very safe to have that vulnerable conversation with our partners if we're numb and offline. Because like Janine's saying, if our partner's like, hey, I'm going to share something vulnerable with you, is now a good time? Can you catch me? And I'm like totally numb. And I'm like, nope, I can't hear that right now. Our partner needs to know that so that we could create safety for them to catch them in their vulnerability. And so that's just a sign. It's time to regulate.
So, and while they're doing this of I'm kind of numbed out is letting the partner know I'm fighting through a lot to get back to you. I need a bit. So in this numbed state, people think like they're just offline, but the body is Novocained out, right? And things are too much. So right now I can't feel, I'm going to fight through it so I can get back to you. So we're still giving that intention of I'm going to fight to get back online, but I need a minute. And at times we need to tell our partner, like, I want to hear how you feel. I need to fight through this and I'm going to come back to you. This is too much right now. My body's kind of shut down. Give me a second, right? And so they just need to kind of communicate it. And some people don't know what they're feeling. And there's a whole piece on what goes on in the brain and how we can't find words to share how we're feeling. And it's not because we don't love our partner. It's our brain literally shut down. I think of it as Novocaine, right? We just Novocained our whole body, and we need time. So just kind of communicating that of, I care about you and I'm going to fight through this so I can get back online.
And like, imagine being the person hearing that, that just feels so safe, because rather than maybe having the person like go offline, right, do the ice cold shutdown that we talked about earlier, instead you're like, oh, they're overwhelmed. I'm important to them. They're going to regulate so we can talk about this. I already feel calmer, right? Just imagining that.
Well, and it's about the coming back. Like, I'm going to fight to come back to you is really like that message of, I don't know what's going on. I can't find it, but I'm going to fight through it so I can come back to you. Because I'm not online right now, right? And we need to honor that. Like, I'm just not online, but I'm going to fight through it so I can get back to you. Again, for that secure attachment.
So I don't know how it happened, but we are running low on time. Time has flown by. I've just been enjoying so much of what you have to share, but I have to leave some time to ask the final question I ask all of my guests, and we have to do it one at a time. So just to summarize, Janine Estes Powell and Jacqueline, aka Jackie Wheelick, they are the authors of Help for High Conflict Couples, Using Emotionally Focused Therapy and the Science of Attachment to Build Lasting Connection. Thank you so much for coming on. And my final question will go with Jackie, because you're the first on my screen. Jackie, or Jacqueline, what do you wish everyone knew about love?
Oh, okay. There's so much that I want to say, but I'm just going to go with the first thing that popped in my mind, just because maybe that's my intuition. It's just hope. That there's so much hope. If you're in love with someone and you're struggling, or you're embarrassed to start couples therapy because you don't know if that means that there's something wrong with your relationship or something, just know that there's so much hope. There's so much research that shows that couples therapy is effective. Over 90% of couples who do EFT feel better after they do it. People feel closer after doing EFT than they did even before the conflict began. And so, like, you've got this. Love is hard. Have hope. It's going to be okay.
Love is hard. Have hope. It's going to be okay. Beautiful. Janine, what do you wish everyone knew about love?
Well, I have a hashtag that my wife and I did a long time ago called Being Loved Is hashtag, and it's about being loved. And what I want everyone to know is love comes in many shapes, forms, and sizes. It comes in like getting kisses with morning breath, right? Or getting coffee in the morning, right? Or having somebody deal with our messy sides, right? Just full acceptance. Love comes in so many shapes and forms. And so really tracking and looking at how people love you, it is we're a pack animal. And love it comes in so many ways as our community. And that simply because your partner might not be saying it, they still might love you. They might not know how to say it. So the Being Loved Is hashtag, I actually went through and had hundreds of people write what it means to be loved with the chalkboard. And it's phenomenal to see what people say. And it's all over. So just look for it.
Okay. Any specific social media or just...
Well, it's a hashtag Being Loved Is, and on YouTube, you can see Being Loved Is, see the video of it, so you can kind of find it there.
Amazing. Well, thanks again, both of you, for coming on to the show. Janine Estes Powell and Jacqueline Wheelick, the authors of Help for High Conflict Couples. For our listeners who want to learn more about both of you, how can they find you?
They can find us at helpforhighconflictcouples.com. Or
easy peasy.
Yeah, very easy. Helper.
Got that domain name. That's good.
And you can find Jackie at...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, JackieWheelick.com. Oh, and our book also is on Amazon or at any bookstore, too.
And then for me, Janine, you can find me at Estes Therapy or JaninePowell.com.
Wonderful. Well, I do have to say, I know you two are in a relationship with each other, but you two have an amazing relationship. You did such a good job at not talking over each other, not interrupting, bouncing back and forth, uniting in your ideas. It was such a wonderful and lovely interview. So thanks again, both of you, for coming on.
Well, thank you, Zach. It's wonderful being on the podcast.
It's so special. That was meaningful. Thank you for sharing. And this was super fun. Thank you.
Wow. What an incredible interview. Thank you, listeners, so much for listening. We hope you remember all of the valuable lessons that Jackie and Janine shared with us today, including safety is sexy. It's important to identify negative cycles of communication, dismantle, stop them, and create new positive cycles. This follows the three-step process of de-escalation, correction, and creation. Couples counseling will not be affected if there is ongoing abuse, addiction, or affairs. And when you communicate with your partner, communicate to them that how they feel matters and that they are important. One way to bring something up is with the statement, "I'm about to share something vulnerable because you matter to me." Thanks again for listening, and remember, you are perfect just the way you are. You are lovable, loving, and loved.
Thanks again for listening to the Learn to Love podcast. To learn more about the show and your host, head over to ZachBeach.com or TheHeartCenter.com. You can also follow Zach on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.